We're going to be continuing our study on how God is good at life. And if you want to turn to 2 Kings chapter 4, that's the account we'll be looking at this morning. So last time, we looked at Ahab, and that was at the end of 1 Kings, and now we've moved into the start of 2 Kings, and so not a whole lot of time's passed since what we looked at last week. We're going to look at Elisha and his interactions with a woman of Shunem. And on the board, let's see if I can figure this thing out. So Shunem is right here. And this map's maybe a little oriented a little bit differently than maybe what we're used to seeing when we look at Israel. But does anything stand out to you about where Shunem is? Right in here. And so my question would be along the lines of, at this point, what's happened in Israel? What's the big event that happened in 1 Kings? How many tribes are there? 12. All right, and how have they broken up? Yeah, basically you've got Judah, which would be with Benjamin, and that would be down toward the bottom here. And then Shunem is up further north of that. Anybody want to take a guess at what tribe that was in? Over in Joshua, I think it talks about how that's in the tribe of Issachar. And so sometimes I play a little game and I try and think of, all right, can I name anyone from these tribes? And some of the tribes, it's pretty easy to come up with someone from that tribe. Like from the tribe of Judah, we can probably come up with a lot of people. Jesus to start with. And then you get to Benjamin and the tribe of Benjamin, well, our first king, Saul. And you get up to the tribe of Issachar, and there's not too many people I could name from the tribe of Issachar. In fact, I can't even name this person because we don't even really know her name. I think that kind of makes this story stand out to me a little bit is you know, most religious-centered activity in the time of the divided kingdoms took place where? Yeah, in Judah, Jerusalem, and the areas around that. So this is not what we would probably consider like a religious hotspot. This is not the place we typically think of when we're trying to think of positive stories and of people who acted religiously. So I just point that out as we start here to think about this woman is... I want us to kind of focus on her character, focus on what we see from her, and recognize that she's probably not, you know, surrounded by lots of what we would consider these positive religious accounts, these examples. So if we start in 2 Kings chapter 4, verse 8, it says, "Now it happened one day that Elisha went to Shunem, where there was a notable woman, and she persuaded him to eat some food. So it was, as often as he passed by, he would turn in there to eat some food. And she said to her husband, 'Look, now I know that this is a holy man of God who passes by us regularly. Please let us make a small upper room on the wall, and let us put a bed for him there, and a table and a chair and a lampstand. So it will be, whenever he comes to us, he can turn in there.'" So look at what this woman's done. So, and think about what her goals are. So she sees that Elisha passes by, and so when he passes by, what does she do? Yeah, she says, "All right, come on in here. Let me get you something to eat." Very nice thing to do. And he seems like probably comes by somewhat frequently. This would have been, I guess, on maybe the route he went on. And so he comes by enough that she decides to do what? Yeah. Yeah, basically create a little bed and breakfast for him, you know, so that anytime he stops by there, he's got a place to rest. He's got a place to stay. And I think what's noticeable about this is what do we see Elisha ask from her? What does he ask her to do?
Well, he evidently Gehazi travels with him.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got to be a big enough room for two of them. I would assume that both of them.
That's the way I take it. I take it that probably Gehazi is also in the room. But, you know, there isn't anything that we see that Elisha asked her to do. He didn't ask her to feed him. He didn't ask her to build a place or to let him stay there. And I think for me personally, this is a challenge to be like this woman, because I think it's easy for us, or at least a lot easier for us, if someone asks us to help with something, okay, I'm willing to do that. But we see she did what? How would you describe what she was doing here? Did she do what was asked? Yeah, I mean, she sought out things that she could do. You know, she looked for how can I serve this man, and I'm going to do this for him. You know, and she tells her husband, please, let us do this. And she tells Elisha, you know, please, come stay here. Let me help you. And so when we think about her attitude and we think about her characteristics, you know, this is the character of a servant. You know, someone who is looking for ways to serve others. Now, the very first description of her, what does it say about her? She's a noble woman, or a notable, I think is what mine says. What does that mean? Probably wealthy. She probably has some money. People would probably recognize who she was, but... you know, but this is someone who obviously had the means to do this. They had the ability. But she's someone who is would be considered probably affluent in the community. Someone that would be recognizable. And so she doesn't just say, well, you know, I've got this, so I'm going to make sure people take care of me. But she took advantage of what she had. She took advantage of the blessings that she had. And so, you know, think about what can we do? How can we find ways to serve if we want to be like her? And maybe you don't have a house that you can build an extra room for the traveling preacher to stay in. You know, that might not be the thing you can do, but she sought out, based on her means, what she could do, and based on the situation, what would be helpful. And so I think this is just such a great example. So let's just kind of keep going. Keep in mind this the type of character she has, and we'll continue to look at some of the other things that we see about her. So, one day, Elisha has come here, and we see that his servant Gehazi is with him, and he tells him to bring this woman, and basically, I want to find out what we can do for her. He says, look, you've been concerned for us, you've taken care of us, you know, what can we do for you? How can we repay you? And so he gives a couple of options of what they might be able to do for her. What does he ask about? Well, before that, before we get to the children, he asks, can I speak about you or lift you up before whom? All right, it's a pretty good audience right there, you know. Yeah, they say it's not about what you know, it's about who you know. And she knew someone who could give her, you know, an audience, make a request for her to the king or to the commander. Do we need to speak on your behalf for anything? And what's her response to this?
She didn't need that.
Yeah, she says, I dwell among my own people. I would describe that as just an attitude of contentment. You know, I've got everything I need. I'm in a good situation. I don't think we see any greed. We don't see any arrogance in her. We don't see any desire to elevate herself. So again, when we're just thinking about the character of this woman, she's very content. She's happy with, she's got joy based on what she has. She doesn't see this need for anything else. So going on, Elisha says, well, I still want to do something for her. What can I do? And so, so what's Gehazi say?
She doesn't have a son.
Yeah. Gehazi says, well, she doesn't have a son. She's not going to be able to have a son, it seems like. You know, it doesn't ever specifically say anything about her being barren. But in a similar situation to a lot of these lessons we've looked at, it seems like physically she wasn't going to be able to have a kid, to have a child, is the idea that we get here. And so this blessing is what Gehazi suggests. And so Elisha brings her in, and what's he tell her?
Not this time next year you'll hold a child. Anyway.
All right. You know, give it a year, and you're going to have a child. And what's her response to that?
Don't get my hopes up.
Hold on. You know, reminds me of Elaine comes in, get out. You know, just push him over. This is too much. This is, and I don't get the idea, and no, my Lord, do not lie to your maidservant. I don't get the idea that she's doubting him. It's just, kind of this expression I see of is this real? Of wait a second, hold on. I need to be able to process this. This is too much for me to process. Or you're not messing with me, are you? And so she's obviously this is a big deal to her. You know, obviously this is something that stands out to her. And what happens? She has the kid. We don't really get anything more from this. He says she's going to have a kid, and then that's the next thing we know is she has a kid. And then we don't know much about this kid, but he's old enough to go out to his father, out to the reapers. And he says, my head, my head. Again, I don't know how demonstrative this was. I'm sure we've had some people complain about headaches from time to time. But he says, so the father sees this and sends him with a servant back to his mother. All right, who's going to take care of the kid with the headache? Mom. You know, I think we can probably all appreciate this situation just from experience. And so he comes and is brought and sits on her knees. And then he dies. And we don't have maybe all the details here, but this seems kind of sudden to me. I might be wrong about that. I mean, maybe it was you know, well, as severe the whole time, but just the way I read this is it just like starts as this headache and it just ends pretty quickly. And I don't have any kids. Some of you have kids. A lot of you have kids. Pretty much, you know, all of you, except for one or two, have had kids. Probably stands out to you pretty significantly of just putting yourself in her position. Your child is sick and on your knees, and he dies. And I can only imagine, you know, the emotion that would bring out. That would be, I imagine, about as hard of a thing to deal with as there would be. And so what does she do?
Well, I don't think she tells her husband.
Doesn't seem like it.
And that kind of surprises us today, at least. We think that, but no. She wants to go to Elisha.
Yeah. Yeah, so she basically asked her husband, hey, I need the ability to go see this man of God, to go see this prophet, go see Elisha. And so, what's his response? Verse 23. Yeah. So, again, I think this tells us a little bit about her character. Is we see probably a habit that she had was during these special times, during the Sabbath or during the new moon or during these you know, religious observances, what's she doing? Yeah, she's going to be with the man of God. I don't know if it's you know, kind of like what we have where we assemble here and have preaching and have studies and things like that, but it was clearly something that wouldn't have been expected or unexpected of her to do. It was something that was a part of her routine, was to participate in those. And so I point out here that, you know, we're in the northern 10 tribes, and if you were just to describe Israel, the northern tribe of Israel, based on their leadership, based on their kings, how would it be rated? I mean, what percentage of the kings of Israel, of the northern tribes, are given basically a good grade for their reign? I don't think there's any. I think it's a big zero. 0% would have got a passing grade of these kings. So this land is not a land that we look at as being this prominent religious center. And again, that's why I kind of pointed out where it is, where she is, that stands out to me. Because even despite that, despite the fact that this is not a prominent religious area, she's still making efforts to practice religion, to practice you know, what she's supposed to. And so because there was someone there, you know, she went to him. She went to Elisha. So it's not about making sure you're surrounded by all the right people. Sometimes that's not possible, but it's doing what you can with where you are. Yes?
You know, Elijah had been told by the Lord there were 7,000 who had not bowed the knee to Baal. So it does seem like that there were those that did regularly worship God accurately.
Yeah.
You know, doing the best they could.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. You know, and again, maybe it's just my bias, but I always looked at Israel, and my initial mindset is they were just all bad. And like you said, Elijah kind of felt the same way, but it wasn't all bad. There were still those who, and this is, I think, a great example of someone who still participated in what they were supposed to. Any other thoughts on that? All right, well, getting back to our story. So his question is, why are you going to him today? You know, it's not a time when you should go to him. What's her response?
Everything is all right.
All right. Again, what would typically you would expect the response here to be?
I would have thought she would have told her husband.
Yeah, you would think she would say, our son died. And I'm going to go because maybe there, she has some hope. But I sense, just by her response, that her faith is so strong that I think she thinks Elisha can raise her son. Now again, she doesn't even want to worry him with that. That's kind of the thing I'm seeing. Well, you don't even need to worry about this. It's all good. It's all going to be taken care of. And so again, just that idea of her faith stands out to me so strongly. So again, as we think about her character, just look at all these things that are positive toward her. And is this not someone who, despite being nameless, we don't know her name, but we see a great example of someone that we can try to imitate, someone we should try to follow in these characteristics. So she says it's well. She saddles up and says to her servant, drive and go forward. You know, get me there until I say stop. So again, we see she's probably relatively wealthy. She has a servant driving her. Tells us a little about her station. And she gets there as quick as possible. And so while she's on her way, who sees her?
The man of God.
All right, so Elisha sees her and does what? Yeah, he sends his servant, Gehazi, to go and see if everything's all right. To ask her, is it well? Is it well with you, with your husband, with your child? So again, his thought is probably, Well, something's out of the ordinary, so I wonder if something's wrong. I need to check on that. What's her response? It is well. You know, shalom, peace, we're good. No problem, no worries. You know, all these ways to say that. But again, we just see that she's, in some ways, I think maybe holding it in, recognizing that, you know, there's nothing that you can do for me. There's nothing that these people can do for me. She needed to get to the man of God. So again, she recognized that he was a man of God and recognizes that that's where she needs to go. She needs to go to the representative of God to be able to have anything to take care of her. So, on in verse 27, she gets to the man of God, and what's she do? Yeah, she goes and I mean, you know, almost this idea of groveling that is the picture I see. She gets down before him and takes hold of his feet. And Gehazi wants to do what? Get her out of here. You know, it reminds me of when the little children come to Jesus, you know, and the apostles are wanting to get away, leave him alone. But again, here he recognizes that leave her alone. You know, she's here for a reason. And he can tell that her soul is in deep distress, is what he says. And he says, the Lord has hidden it from me and has not told me. So it's an interesting idea here. You know, we think of these prophets, and prophets can see what's happening in other places or what's going to happen in the future and speak these things that God has given them. But how much did Elisha know? Yeah, he didn't know what was going on here. You know, it's not that this prophet was all-knowing. He didn't have this sense. It took him getting to her and him recognizing that she's distressed before he recognized that there was a problem.
This goes to show you that, you know, the prophets only knew what God told them.
Exactly. Did God know?
Yes.
And the prophet, though he represents God, though he speaks as an oracle of God, speaks for God, he's still not on the level of God. He hasn't been given all power, all knowledge in these manners. So he's still, you know, as we would say, he's still a man. When compared to God, he can't compare to God. Despite as much as we might look up to what we see from him, we've seen him and we'll see him perform many great works, and you know, he performs so many miracles, but that's only God working through him. That's God doing through him what God decides to do through him. It's not what he can do of his own accord. Any other thoughts on that? All right. So, she finally gets to him. She gets the audience that she's looking for. And what does she ask?
He said, did I ask for this child?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I kind of see a contrast between her and Hannah. Mm-hmm. Hannah wanted a child.
Right.
I see this woman going to the prophet Elijah asking for a child.
Right.
Sort of gave it to her in a sense, maybe thinking that she wanted it. And, you know, they're older in age and all that. Maybe they didn't want it.
Yeah, she it's not something that she sought out. I think we see that, you know, she clearly cared about this child once she had the child. And I kind of get the picture of, you know, if you don't have any expectations, you know, you don't think about anything. But if someone offers you something that you think would be very valuable and then they take that away, you know, that would hit you harder than just not being maybe in having that opportunity in the first place. You know, if someone decided, well, you know, I'm gonna offer you these tickets to the Final Four, and then I'm getting ready to go, and you know, I tear them up or something happens, and I can't go. I'd be like, well, why'd you even give those to me in the first place? Why'd you get my hopes up? Why'd you build me up like this? Whereas had you not said anything about it, I wouldn't have cared. I wouldn't have thought anything of it. So I think we see, to me, that's kind of the attitude she has here is I didn't have to have this. Why did you build me up just so I could be, you know, crushed so hard? And she says, you know, didn't I even say, you know, don't deceive me. Don't, you know, don't build me up. Don't trick me into thinking I'm going to have something special.
Mine says, did I not say don't raise my hopes? So I think that in a way she did want a child, but she had realized, okay, it's not meant to be.
Yep.
And then here he comes along, and I don't know that, it's not that she didn't want to have a child, she just didn't want.
Yeah.
She had maybe wanted it for so long and then came to terms with the fact this is never going to happen, and she was okay with it, and then he comes along and these are all these feelings that she didn't ever want
to
feel.
Yeah, that's how I take it. I think that's a good way to put it. You know, get my hopes up is kind of that thought that I see from this as well. I think that is how I took this. So Elisha, once he hears about this, he does what? He sends Gehazi to do what? All right, and he gives him some pretty specific instructions, which were what?
Tuck your belt or your cloak into your belt. Take my staff into your hand and run. If you meet anyone, don't greet him. If anyone greets you, don't answer. Lay my staff on the boy's face.
Now, this is your task. This is the first thing you do. You don't let anything hold you up from doing this. So typically, we would think that if there's such urgency placed on something, on committing an act or on doing something, that what you're instructed to do must be pretty important. So Gehazi gets there, and he lays the staff on the face of the child. He does this, he completes this task, and what happens?
The boy has an awakening.
Yeah. Yeah, nothing happens. Why not?
He wasn't the man of God, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, there are some things I can think of that might be the reason, but we don't really know. Like, it's not explicit, I don't think, of why this doesn't work. I've read some speculation, and I think you know, whatever you come up with is speculation. You know, some people thought, well, maybe he didn't do what was told. Maybe he didn't go straight there, and I don't see any reason to believe that. Any other situation you can think of where someone tried to be healed and it didn't work out?
Yeah, Jesus' apostles failed on occasion to heal, and Jesus said, "Oh, you have little faith," and he explained why they couldn't cast out a demon. Gehazi's history, the next couple of chapters, you see that he's not like Elisha. Mm-hmm. He takes the gifts from Naaman and then he becomes leprous. So his character is not as splendid as maybe we would have hoped, or obviously Elisha would have hoped and this lady would have hoped.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it doesn't say specifically, but just from similar situations, I think, you know, it stands out to me when Jesus was on the Mount of Transfiguration and he comes down and your disciples couldn't heal my, I think it was an epileptic son. And what's Jesus' answer for why they couldn't do it?
Well, it has to do with faith, but also he says this comes out by prayer, maybe fasting. I mean, it's more complicated than, you know, we think people, faith healers who profess that today, and people want to believe they have the power to do that. It's an awkward situation, and it even shows in the biblical times that there are those who might have been able to heal or perform a miracle or sign, or just not able, because the power does rest with God, obviously. And Gehazi is just not the man to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, she. If I'm reading this correctly, and I always struggle with pronouns because there's lots of pronouns in the Bible to figure out exactly who's the he and the I. But it seems like to me that she's said, I'm staying with you. I'm not leaving your side, Elisha. I need, you know, you're going to have to handle this. But yeah, like it strikes my mind back when we talked about unbelief and then prayer and fasting are the two things that are mentioned in Matthew chapter 17. And he talks about if you have the faith as a mustard seed, and we talked about the little mustard seed a couple weeks ago. If you have that faith, you will be able to move this mountain. Say to this mountain, move, and it will. You know, nothing will be impossible. Was what he told his disciples there. And so, you know, something was missing. Something was missing here. What it was, we aren't told specifically. So then Elisha shows up. Let's get down to verse 32. And so Elisha comes in, and he sees the child lying there. And so what does he do?
He goes in and prays to the Lord.
All right, so that's the first thing we see is he prays to God. Is that the first thing that we do? Or at least the first thing that we should do? Pretty much always. Go to God. And I think that mirrors in some ways, you know, the first thing that she did. It wasn't maybe pray to God, but it was the same concept of go to the man of God. Go to where God can help you. Seek help from God, not from anyone else. And I think Elisha, we see that as well. He prays is the first thing he does. So then, verse 34 is kind of an odd story. And some of these healings are a little odd to us with the way that they're done. But he lays on the child, and he puts his mouth on the child's mouth and his eyes on the child's eyes and stretches out over him. Not what my first thought would be for how you heal somebody. So what happens to the child when he does this? All right. So, you know, he's been dead at least long enough that he's cold. So he starts to warm up. But it seems like he's not completely brought back to life here. So then what happens? Verse 35.
He gets off of him and walks back and forth, then he goes back and lays on him again.
He does it again. All right, and then what happens with the child?
He sneezes seven times and opens.
All right. Again, you know, I would call this maybe a two-part or a two-step healing. And again, we see something similar with Jesus, you know, with the blind man, who first he sees men like trees. He sees just these maybe some images. And then the second time, he's all the way healed. You know, here it's the concept of first he warmed up, and then the second time he's brought back. He sneezes seven times and opens his eyes, which is an interesting picture. And then he calls Gehazi and says, you know, bring this woman up here. And she comes up and he tells her, pick up your son. And so what does she do?
She went in and fell at his feet.
Yeah. She bowed down. She fell at his feet. And then she picked up her son and went out. And that's how it closes. You know, that's how this story closes. So, yeah, did he even know this had happened? I'd say this would probably be a story that you would repeat. You would let him know. You know, it's one of those things after you've broken something, but you fixed it, then you can tell someone, hey, I broke your but it's good now. You don't have to worry about it. I don't know what the picture is, but we see here that, you know, the child is brought back to life and she takes up her son. If you want to turn over, we don't have a lot of time, but we'll just kind of look through here, to 2 Kings chapter 8. And we'll see that this maybe wasn't the end of the story with her. It says, verse 1 of 2 Kings chapter 8, then Elisha spoke to the woman whose son he had restored to life, saying, arise and go, you and your household, and stay wherever you can, for the Lord has called for a famine, and furthermore, it will come upon the land for 7 years. So the woman arose and did according to the saying of the man of God, and she went with her household and dwelt in the land of the Philistines 7 years. I think this is the same woman. And so we're going to see this story down here of what took place. Verse 3, it came to pass at the end of 7 years that the woman returned from the land of the Philistines, and she went to make an appeal to the king for her house and for her land. And the king talked with Gehazi, the servant of the man of God, saying, "Tell me, please, all the great things Elisha has done." Now it happened, as he was telling the king how he had restored the dead to life, that there was the woman whose son he had restored to life, appealing to the king for her house and for her land. And Gehazi said, "My lord, O king, this is the woman, and this is her son whom Elisha restored to life." And when the king asked the woman, she told him. So the king appointed a certain officer for her, saying, "Restore all that was hers and all the proceeds of the field from the day that she left the land until now." So again, kind of a little future story, a little tidbit about her we see. And again, it builds on her character. Is Elisha tells her to do what? Yeah, leave her home, leave her land. And what does she do? All right. Again, we recognize she's probably pretty wealthy, it seems like. And I'd say the more you have, the harder it would be maybe to leave it behind. But again, we don't see any hesitation. We see her trust in this man of God. And she does exactly what he says. And then when she comes back, I don't know if this is providence or what's happening here, but... She goes to the king, and Gehazi's there, and she's a witness for what Elisha has done, for the works of Elisha. And after this, her land is given back to her. So, again, just this story is brought up later to show the significant acts of this man of God. And I just thought that was interesting, that it's not really tied with the story we were looking at, but I thought it's kind of neat to look at what happens after that. And so just a little quick example there. But I think we're about out of time. So just in closing, just, you know, think about this woman, think about all the characteristics she showed, and think about, you know, do we imitate that? You know, are we willing to serve and looking for ways we can help others, looking for everything we can do, to help, to serve others? And do we trust in God? Do we go to God first when things get bad? Do we go, or do we try and figure out a solution on our own, or those we trust, you know, go to God first, and just the trust that we have. And then when she sees that the man of God says to do something, she does it regardless of how difficult it might have been. You know, when we see the word of God, when it tells us something to do, even if it's hard, is that something we're willing to do? And just kind of in closing, it reminds me of maybe she's the opposite of the rich young ruler. You know, she had both very great possessions, but the ruler's told to leave what he has and follow, and he won't. You know, she's told you need to leave what you have, and she did. So I think we just see such great character from her and a great example we can follow. So that's all I got. Thank you all, and we'll continue shortly.